Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAKorea.com and Verrill at Verrill-Law.com. Today, our guest is Tom Ellis, Chief Human Resource Officer for the Jackson Laboratories. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
No, I'm glad to have you. How's the weather up there in Bahaba?
A little cloudy today, but we're coming off a great weekend, and hopefully we're going to get an abundance of sunshine, and it looks like it's going to be a little bit warmer here in the next few days, so looking forward to that.
Well, we definitely like the words warmer. There's no question about that. So for especially in an area that has at least, you know, at least a 3 or 4 weeks of summer, it's great. No, I'm only kidding in terms of it. It's what it is. You know, Jax in general, as we call it, the Jackson Laboratories, Jackson Common, you know, has just grown so much over the last number of years. You know, you have now taken over as Chief Human Resource Officer. You've been there how long?
Be 4 years at the end of this month.
It's fabulous. Even in that 4 years, the growth is staggering. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've seen in the growth of the organization, and we'll talk about some of the challenges and the things that are going on there.
Sure. So for those that may not be familiar, the Jackson Laboratory actually has several facilities, the largest of which is here in Maine. And we have grown. I think the growth actually started shortly after what we now refer to as the Great Recession. And it's been what I would refer to as a slow, steady pattern of growth. We now have over 2,300 employees, including or exclusive of an additional 400 affiliates. So when you think about what HR manages in the organization kind of handles, it's closer to 2,700. And, you know, the growth has really been driven both on the research side. So, you know, when you think about traditional research, you're talking about PhDs and principal investigators doing all kinds of research around things like cancer, Alzheimer's, those sort of thing, and as well as in our most production facility, which is where we breed, produce, and ship mice all over the world, and both of those areas have grown quite substantially, even during my time, even during my 4 years here. And so that's presented, obviously, an HR challenge, both from a recruitment perspective as well as what we do with talent management and trying to develop, keep, and grow employees to be long-term family members of Jack's, as it were.
Yeah, there's no question that if you look at that, you've got Maine, you have Connecticut, you have California predominantly, right? And I may be missing one, but that's the predominant areas. All three are not what I would call states that are easy to recruit in. So, and all three have their unique challenges. Correct?
Yeah, I think that's very much on point, Dave. And as most employers know, the current labor market nationally is a real challenge, right? So you've got 10,000 baby boomers per day leaving the workforce. In many cases, we don't have adequate backfills for those folks. And so HR professionals are really challenged with finding ways not only to recruit, which is really the front end of the pipeline, but also how do you grow and develop the talent and keep the talent that you do have. And there really needs to be strong focal areas or strong focus in both of those areas. And we're particularly challenged here, of course, with geography, because as beautiful as Bar Harbor is, and it is beautiful, and everybody is mostly familiar with the National Park and all that, geography does present a challenge. And, you know, we have a limited number of space or amount of space because it is an island, so housing, transportation, and all those things become concerns for the employer. When you look at a place like California, which has a much larger labor market, the challenges are still acute there, but they're different. So some of our trades positions, for example, building automation techs, painters, plumbers, you know, those types of positions, when the market is good, a lot of folks like to go into San Francisco and make a lot of money. They may live in the Sacramento area and commute in, and so we're faced with the challenge of trying to recruit those types of positions and keep the folks, again, that we have. You know, in Connecticut, we have mostly translational research work being done, so you're talking about mostly a laboratory setting with you know, some back office type roles, facilities, IT, HR, that sort of thing. And again, different labor market, certainly different challenges, and a different workforce mix. So absolutely, challenges all the way around.
And so some of the things that you're doing to attract and find talent, and we're going to stick on the recruiting side for right now, is are you finding that it to be effective in terms of really going out and getting talent that you need? What are some of the tricks of the trade that you're using to make that happen?
That's a great question, Dave. And so I think there's, you know, things that a lot of folks will be familiar with, right? So for Jax, you know, what draws our employees, and we hear this over and over again from them, is really the mission. So Jax is in a great position as far as being able to say we have this wonderful mission where we're really trying to improve human health. And people get that. And I think particularly for millennials, as they have now crested the hill on being the largest segment of the workforce, that's an important thing. Having said that, you need to market that, right? So there's a marketing, advertising, getting the word out kind of component that goes along with that. Now, beyond that, there's a bunch of kind of technical interventions, if you will, that that we are working on and are in various stages of maturity. So you think about things like internships, right? And so, again, based on the diversity of our workforce, we have an initiative in place right now to start to look more deeply at having a larger umbrella program that includes, you know, college internships, certainly, but also trade schools, high schools, apprenticeship programs, and those sort of things. And we're working towards being able to do that effectively. You know, looking at business operations differently. So, for example, I was talking with a group of CHROs not all that long ago, and one of them had said, you know, we really look differently at how the work could be done. So we might be able to use technology to do a certain piece of the work that previously was done manually. And because we were able to do that, maybe we need to hire less of that specific role. Of course, it means for other roles, we may have to look at hiring a different type of skill set as well. So that's a part of it. How we handle remote work. So, you know, for some organizations, remote work was really more of a reaction to market forces, and now it's become almost a strategic necessity. You know, how are you going to manage that? You know, if you look at an organization like Yahoo, they actually eliminated remote work at one point because they didn't feel they were getting the innovation they needed from the folks, you know, that were in this diversified workforce arrangement, and so they basically put a stop to it. But for other organizations, finding the right position and the right people in those positions that can be effective in a remote setting is really a critical part to their strategy around recruitment and talent acquisition. And then, you know, really trying to keep candidates engaged, whether you hire them or not, right? You want the time to fill to be short, and you want people to have a good experience and to be able to say good things about your organization, whether they ultimately are offered or accept a position. And so continuing to look at those sort of things are some examples I would give you about, you know, how we're working and looking at things differently on the talent acquisition side.
Are you also finding that there is also what we would call external pressures having to do with compensation, benefits, or other external factors that are forcing a look at the organizational structure and what always has been?
Yeah, I think that's right, Dave. There's a couple of different things, and you mentioned both of them. Look, I think survey after survey, you always see kind of at least two themes. One is candidates coming in. It's important to them that they understand what their upward mobility looks like, right? And so that speaks to the organizational structure. Who am I going to report to? How is that going to look? And then as I stay with the organization and hopefully grow within the organization, what are my opportunities? Are they going to be within that specific functional area? Or do you have good kind of cross-pollinization programs that are going to help me learn about maybe HR or finance? Or if I'm in research and I want to move to the production side, in our case, what does that look like? And so I think that's important. And then, of course, you know, benefits and compensation. And for purposes of this discussion, I'll kind of lump those two things together. You know, you want compensation to be competitive. I think it's been very interesting that we've not until recently seen the wage movement, despite the tight labor market, that we expected. But if you're going to be competitive in the environment, you've got to pay market competitive pay, and that can take a bunch of different forms, right? You know, good base pay, you know, with appropriate variable pay or incentive plans, sign-on bonuses, these sort of things. And having all those tools in the employer tool belt, as Jax does, becomes an important part. of us being able to identify and then ultimately hire the talent that we need. And then on the benefit side, you know, we've done, I think, some really creative things here at JAX that have worked quite well for us. You know, we have an on-site primary care clinic, so employees don't have to go away from work, you know, to see their doctor. And of course, again, in an environment that is has the geography, you know, of the Bar Harbor area, that is an important thing. You know, retirement planning, right? So, you know, JAX offers, for example, a 10% match on a 5% contribution, or a 10% contribution on a 5% employee contribution. And those are the types of things that will help us not only with attraction but also with retention. And they become important parts as well as helping JAX be an employer of choice when candidates are making selections on where they want to go to work. Because again, in today's labor market, they have options, and it's definitely a seller's market, as they say.
We're talking with Tom Ellis, Chief Human Resource Officer for the Jackson Laboratories. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulob. And we're really talking about some of the success that JAX has had and some of the things that they're doing that make a difference in talent right now. We're talking about hiring right at this point in recruiting. Tom, one of the other things that I know that is having this conversation is if you want to talk about making sure that fair pay, right? Equal wage, fair pay. And that has become a big topic or a big conversation, not only regulatorily in terms of, government getting involved in this conversation. And also looking at the fact that nonprofits and for-profits sometimes pay at different levels in terms of the way it is based upon, you know, if you want to talk about revenue or income that comes in. Do you find that it has been easier as a nonprofit to be able to attract talent versus against maybe for-profit competitors? I realize certainly the mission that you do is the predominant force, no question about that. But what have you seen in terms of that area, in terms of that nonprofit versus for-profit feel?
Well, that's a great question. And I'll tell you, Dave, that, for those in your audience that likely don't know this, I've spent over a decade in the not-for-profit space, but prior to that, I spent 10 years working for a very large corporation in the financial services industry that was strictly for-profit. And there are certainly differences. And again, I think mission and all that aside, when you think about compensation, you need to be realistic, right, about both the size and the scale of the organization. But at the same time, in order to recruit the best talent, you really need to have a good mix of total rewards, right? And I think that kind of starts with base pay. And again, you want your base pay to be competitive, certainly. And competitive can mean different things and does mean different things for different organizations. We have a market-based, performance-driven compensation structure. And what that means is that we do external benchmarking for all of our key positions, and we determine what our appropriate market is. So for some positions, that could be a local market. It could be Maine, could be Northern Maine. For other positions, managerial positions, director positions, that sort of thing, it could be more of a regional labor market. And our executives, certainly that's a national labor market. And then you take that a step further and really blend some of that benchmarking, where you may look strictly at a position for using not-for-profit benchmarks. So, for example, if I'm looking for somebody that's in development, and this would be true for any organization, you're not going to find development positions typically in the for-profit world, right? So you're really using not-for-profit benchmarks. But for other positions, you may use some blend of for-profit or not-for-profit. And all of that math and science and everything ultimately get you to a place where maybe there's a little bit of art involved, and you say, okay, well, now internally we've looked at all the data, and I think internally the worth of these positions kind of lines up this way. And all of that math and science really, you know, comes together to hopefully put a pay structure in place that allows you to recruit and retain the talent that you want. And I will just pause there and say, you know, having somebody within the right salary range and saying it's market competitive is a wonderful thing, and you want to continually evaluate that, make sure that's working. But how quickly somebody moves through a salary range based on their performance and that sort of thing is another really important factor, and that's often where you may lose some folks. And again, having done this work for a number of years, you know, I've had conversations in the healthcare space and other not-for-profits where folks would say, you know, we're losing people, and it's really because of our pay. And so then they call me, and I show up on their doorstep, and we start looking. I say, well, you know, the salary ranges and what you offer for salaries seems really competitive. It really just seems that you're not able to bridge the gap between when you onboard somebody and 2 or 3 years down the road, or whatever that learning curve is, you're not getting them to the midpoint of that range quickly enough. And that, assuming that that range aligns with a market reference point for that job, that's a problem, because folks, you know, 2 years into it, they're like, boy, you know, I expected to be farther ahead. And so we need to pay attention to those sort of things and make sure folks are aware of how we pay and why we pay what we pay. And so there's some education and transparency that comes with that with our managers. It's interesting because I think employees often go to their managers to understand their compensation. For benefits, it's different. Often employees don't want to go to their manager because there may be some piece of information that they want to keep private, and that's completely appropriate. And when managers aren't fully educated and they don't understand the compensation philosophy and they don't understand how jobs are market priced and why pay is what it is, and they can't effectively communicate that to staff, that can present a real barrier, both to good retention as well as to some of the questions around the regulatory stuff.
No, you're absolutely correct, and that education piece is so critical. We're talking with Tom Ellis, Chief Human Resource Officer at the Jackson Laboratories. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their QuickPost product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill at verrill-law.com. Today we're talking with Tom Ellis, Chief Human Resource Officer for the Jackson Laboratories. We're talking about some of the success Jackson's had and the reasons behind that in terms of retaining, keeping, and hiring talent. You know, it's Tom, we talked a little bit about the recruiting part, and at the end of that segment, you talked a little bit about compensation, and I think one of the key takeaways, if people are really paying attention, is the fact that education piece for the managers, right, that education piece in regards to making sure that they understand everything that has to do with hiring and making sure that they understand why we're paying people the way they are, how that pay structure works. And that goes to retention, which is what we're going to talk about next, right? That leadership development is not just leadership development in regards to engagement, but really leadership development in terms of making sure that supervisors, when they start from an onboarding all the way up, understand how to take care of their people. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a great point, Dave. And I think it's one, again, having been in this type of a role and been in HR for a number of years, every organization has challenges, and it's not a static thing, right? So over time, that onboarding process, as technology changes, as our approachment to management changes, those things all need to be inculcated into the onboarding process, right? And I divide this into two, right? You want all new managers coming on board to have all of the technical skills right away. And again, those are changing and evolving as we speak because of the speed at which technology is evolving. And so there's that challenge to get them up to speed and educated on how to administer compensation plans, how to administer payroll, how to and where to direct employees to self-service. And that, again, revolves around technology and understanding all of it. And then, of course, there's the other side of that coin that's equally as important, which are all the people-related items. So how they manage difficult conversations, how they coach performance, all of these things related around making sure the employees have the tools, support, and education they need to be successful in their roles. And then your hope is, right, to bring both of those things together and really have this your managers, again, be fully educated, to have the tools, the support, the education they need to be able to do that effectively. And there's, of course, a variety and no lack of information out there about different ways to do that. And a lot of times, or in almost every case, that information needs to be tailored to the organization's culture, mission, values, and those sort of things. And so, yeah, we have, and I think as we've started and continued to grow, it's very easy to lose sight of that. And so we've had to spend additional attention, and we are currently now investing quite heavily on the talent management side of the business because of that growth. And so making sure we take some of our top leaders, you know, like our CEO, Ed Liu, and some of those folks who are very skilled in these areas, being able to kind of bottle that, for lack of a better term, and diffuse that down through the organization becomes critical for Jax and for any employer, really, to be able to have continued success, especially in an environment where you're growing.
Yeah, there's no question, and I'm happy to report we've had Dr. Liu on, and he has certainly shared a lot of what's going on with the Jackson Laboratories with us, and obviously his vision is wonderful and amazing when you really put it together, and I can see where people will want to be part of that, right? They want to be part of that that mission, that vision. However, at the end of the day, they got to pay their bills, right? And that's the bottom line. And you know, this market is an employee-driven market. It's one that really forces employers to look very hard at what they're doing. To be honest with you, there's an argument to be made that this is not a surprise, right? We've gone through the cycle where it was an employer market. Now it's just it's another cycle where it's gone to the employee market, though. I would argue this is certainly one of the lowest unemployment rates we've seen in a long time. Have you thought of, and has the organization thought of, different ways that it's looking to try to improve, if we would call measuring, employee engagement?
Well, it's such a great question, Dave. And I think the short answer, of course, is yes. And I think one of the areas we have opportunity, and one of the bits of the operation in HR that where I'm going to really take a strong leadership role, is really going to be in updating our technology. So without mentioning vendor names, we're in the process of signing a contract, and we need to get to a place where both our HR staff and our leaders, and we just talked about our management staff, frontline all the way up, have ready access to data and information. And reporting is the foundation, but we really want some analytical horsepower in HR. And people don't often think of HR as a data and analytics engine, but more and more it's becoming that. So as HR functions more strategically, the requirement of that strategic function is that you automate and push down as much transactional work as you can. And through that automation, you develop robust reporting and analytics capabilities. And we're really going to be focused on that for the next probably 2 to 3 years here at Jax, because that will then enable your HR staff as well as your managers to be the most effective they can be. And, it goes beyond turnover and vacancy, and those sort of things. Super important. And I think every HR shop, in the world has a reporting inventory that has those, that foundational reporting. Now we need to take that to the next level to try to start to explain to managers, what is that telling us? If people are leaving the organization and there's regrettable turnover in a certain area, why is that happening, right? And that's where the data can help you, because oftentimes, and it's been my history, especially in the not-for-profit space, where managers would approach me or my team and say, hey, look, we've got people leaving. The turnover's high. We believe it's because of compensation. And if we didn't unpack that, if we didn't fully understand all the reasons why people were leaving the organization, then we would likely make some pay adjustments, and we'd get some lift for that. Maybe the hiring's good. Maybe we stem the tide on turnover for a short period of time. And then within the span of 6 months, they're back knocking at my door again saying, hey, we're still struggling, because we didn't get to the root cause of why people were leaving. Maybe the managers need a certain type of education or training. Maybe there's an issue with the physical environment. Again, there can be a variety of, and are often a variety of reasons that, quite frankly, very rarely ever revolve solely or even at all around compensation. And so once you've unpacked all of that through the use of data and analysis, and you've been able to have those conversations, you get to the root cause. Now we can offer the right HR service for the right problem. And then we come back to that on the back end. So 6 months later, we come back and we say, okay, how are we doing? What do our numbers look like? Are we still having an issue? Or was our intervention successful at the end of the day? And we can measure that. And we should be able to demonstrate that through data and analytics that that's worked or it hasn't worked, and we need to take another swing at it. And so that's really, you know, ideally where you'd like to be. And again, ideally, HR is in the function of being a strategic consultant to the business. And of course, the byproduct of that is that means we have to understand the business. So that assumes that we've well understood the business in advance of those conversations.
We're talking with Tom Ellis, Chief Human Resource Officer for the Jackson Laboratories. You know, Tom, one of the other things that we're seeing, and I'm sure you're seeing it as well, is the longevity issue, the longevity charting and figuring out the ages and the succession planning that goes along with that, as well as when we're talking about retaining talent. You know, when you're talking about people that have been there 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 plus years, you know, the question really becomes, what are we talking about in terms of educating or developing these people when they're in that senior level of their career? Yes, they have great roles. Yes, they have incredible, maybe critical roles in the organization. But how does that mentoring, that coaching, that developing really come about? And what is the Jackson Laboratories and you looking to do to capture that longevity, bring it back within the organization, share it with the younger group in terms of the people that are coming up from down below and making sure that they truly understand it and keeping that culture at the same time without losing some of the critical culture that is the Jackson Laboratories?
Yep, again, great question. I think we've had some success in some areas with doing that very thing. Now, you've got to keep in mind that some of these folks are not wanting to continue to work 40 hours a week, right? In a lot of cases, you know, they eventually want to get to retirement. But many of them are happy, you know, to stay on a couple days a week. And like most of us, you know, that are listening to this program today, we love to teach. So we have the opportunity for people that are both willing and able to do that to really pass on that institutional knowledge. But for each person, and I think the challenge is finding a consistent policy, but understanding that there are going to be nuances to people's preferences and desires about how much they work and what they do for work in that type of a situation where, you know, we're saying, hey, look, we'd love to keep you on for another 3 or 4 years or 2 years or whatever that length of time is and have you work, you know, a shorter schedule, but really try to get some knowledge transfer from you to folks on your team. I think that's really important. Again, I think we've had some success in doing that because we have had people that were interested in doing it. They were good at it, and it's worked out well. It was the classic win-win scenario. You know, I think there's another thing, Dave, that I think ultimately has started to become and will become more popular that helps, and it's related to this issue, is really the mid-career internship. So I've had conversations with people, not Jack's employees, but people that were interested in coming to Jack's. Their current work environment and their current position or job that they held was really not what they wanted to do long term, and maybe they've been doing it for a number of years, maybe it's 5 or 10 years, and they're just at a place where they realize they want to do a different type of, say, research. You know, they want to do more, they want to be in a lab, for example, in this specific case. And so in talking to this individual, I said, well, let me connect you, you know, with some of our PhDs, some of our principal investigators that are doing research, and let's figure out if there's a way to move you from healthcare delivery, which is what you do today, to a research type setting and what it would take to do that. And again, one way to potentially get there is through these mid-career internships. So you're typically talking about people that have been in the workforce anywhere from 5 to 10 years, and they're going to come to Jack's in a mid-career internship and likely make some type of a transition either from a position they do today that may be related or completely unrelated. And so it's thinking creative in those types of ways as well to try to utilize some of the institutional knowledge or some of the industry knowledge that people may have for the benefit of, you know, of the employer.
You are exactly right. And, you know, one of the things that I don't think is done well a lot at organizations, and I'd like your input on that, is formalizing that mentoring program. Does Jax do that, or is it just a little bit more organic? I'm just curious of how you handle that.
Yeah, I would say more organic is the current state. And again, ideally, we want to move, as part of this initiative we have really looking at internships, we'd like the mid-career internship to be a part of that portfolio, ultimately. And I think we're going to continue, or I know we're going to continue to work towards that. I do think that is a bit of an unmet or an underutilized tool today, and one that I think would have great value, certainly for Jax, but for all employers as they think about that. And I do agree having that be more formal. Now, I've had and seen both at Jax as well as other employees great success with less formal mentorship programs. And so I want to just be clear that I think the mid-career internship is a separate piece of the overall puzzle. You know, the mentorship program and starting mentorship with your own employees for areas that are outside of the functional area they currently may work in have been shown to be very successful. And in my own experience, and I'll just tell my own story here, I found the informal program to be actually more effective. And I've stayed connected oftentimes with those leaders and still am today with several of them over my career. So wherever I was and now here at Jax, I always identified a mentor that was outside of my functional area and typically at least a level above the level I was at that point in time. And again, I still do that today. And that mentorship arrangement for me, the informal mentorship arrangement where typically I met with these folks once a month, I drove the agenda, and the agenda could involve anything from specific projects and initiatives I was working on here at Jax to, hey, I'm thinking about my career really broadly, or I'm finding difficulty managing work-life balance, I've got some things going on at home. And it was just a safe place to have all of those conversations and for me to get input from somebody who has done it for a long time and done it well and is a well-recognized leader at the organization, and for me to get that input and to really benefit from their experiences. And I found that to be super successful. I think as long as I'm in the workforce, I will always benefit from doing that. And I've typically waited a little while when I've joined a new organization, typically 6 months, just to get the lay of the land and to really understand who the leadership group was and who I might benefit most from having that type of relationship with. But those relationships have and continue to pay dividends for me and for others, and will, I think, throughout my working life.
I think that's a great tip and something that everybody should be looking at. Look, anytime you can grow and educate yourself, it's absolutely critical and is able to look at blind spots that you have that you may not even know that are there. Again, we're talking with Tom Ellis, CHRO, Chief Human Resource Officer at the Jax Laboratories. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill at verrill-law.com. Now, today we're talking with Tom Ellis, Chief Human Resource Officer for the Jax Laboratories. We've been talking about some of the success that Jax has had in regards to just HR in general. And Tom, you know, people may not know you. You haven't been on the show before, which we're remedying that right now, I might add. Could you take a few minutes and kind of give your history a little about, you know, how you got to this point of Chief Human Resource Officer? I mean, a lot of people aspire to get there.
Sure. Interestingly enough, my career did not start out in HR. I started in undergrad. I attained a business degree. And by the way, it might be helpful to your listeners to know all of this took place in Maine. I'm a Maine kid. You know, I joked when I came to Jax with Chuck Hewitt, who was the COO at the time, you know, that I was born in Maine, I lived in Maine, and they'll probably bury me here. Having said that, you know, I did my undergraduate and graduate work here in the state, and I started out for a little bank called MBNA, which you may be familiar with. It is was bought out in 2005 or acquired by Bank of America. But I spent 9 years there in a variety of positions. And towards the end, I oversaw projects for our sales group and had the opportunity to do a lot of different work, including on incentive programs. As we started to look at some of our groups and some of the projects we had, we really wanted to look at how we handled, you know, our telesales staff versus the rest of the staff, and should that be different? Should it be the same? It's just a classic kind of HR problem. And so really started to get excited about that type of work, and then had the chance to leave there and go to Unum, was then Unum Provident. Spent a short time there before moving to Maine Health and Maine Medical Center, where I was there for 6 years. And that's really where my HR career started. I started out as a compensation analyst. Interestingly enough, prior to that, I didn't even know a compensation analyst position existed. But I love the balance between, you know, the numbers and the data and the analytics and the reporting, which was something that was really in my wheelhouse, and the people part of it. And that was the first job I had had that really brought those two components together. And so I just fell in love with the role and that whole piece of it. And I spent a little over 6 years there, working primarily under Judy West, who's the CHRO there, and Sue Pelletier as well. Really enjoyed my time there, loved the organization, and so got my first taste in HR and also in healthcare, and saw the need in healthcare and the opportunity for good business people and good HR people to really impact and make a difference in the business. And so I had the opportunity to leave there as my career grew from being a compensation analyst, and I was the compensation manager and oversaw the compensation program for the entire hospital, which at that point was probably about 4,400 employees, and got a chance to do some work with the system as well as we were starting the integration process. Got the opportunity to get involved in moving HR, finance, and IT to a shared service model, which, of course, now it's been several years, and they've really evolved there, but we were just getting started during my tenure there. I then got the opportunity to leave Maine Health and move on to a role or a similar type of a role with then Eastern Maine Healthcare, now Northern Light Health, as the Director of Compensation. And before I left there to come to JAX, HR Technology was in the process of being transitioned under me. That ultimately didn't happen because I made the move to come to JAX and have been here at JAX ever since. And started here in my role at JAX, overseeing compensation benefits and HR technology. So always in the specialist side of things, and really focused, you know, on the data and the analytics, you know, and the technical side of HR. Really enjoyed it. I think it's a less known area of HR for most people when you talk about human resources, and you're not talking to a human resources professional. Folks will say, you know, oh, that's the people that, you know, come and talk to us when there are problems and that sort of thing. And that's true, of course. We know that employee relations is an important part of the HR function. But many people, and I find this true in our schools, and this is something I think I would like to help be part of a remedy for, is that when we're teaching folks about HR, you know, in undergraduate and graduate courses, we should be sharing the full scope of available positions that are in HR, because again, I think people are mostly ignorant of those things. We just don't talk about them. And most people that I've talked to that have become compensation professionals or, you know, HRIS people and those sort of things kind of stumbled their way into it. You know, it was a role they didn't know about. Maybe they found out from a friend or something became available at work, and they're like, I'll give this a try. There was never, at least in my experience in undergraduate and graduate school, there was never a career path for those roles. And so, you know, I hope that we'll get to the point where people won't be surprised, I guess, when they hear about those types of roles, because they're exciting and they're interesting. They're roles that are well compensated, believe it or not. So there's a great opportunity there, I think, for folks.
You know, it's interesting you say that, but so many HR folks have worked their way up from the roads coming out of finance, for example, right, or from a payroll side, or maybe even a benefit side. And you are correct. They don't necessarily know about all the other specializations or unique roles that could be out there in terms of finding an HR role. And to your point, a lot of the schools, there aren't a lot of what I would call HR curriculum, and that is unfortunately just true in regards to what is out there currently. But hopefully that will change over time. Tom, what is probably the biggest aha or surprise that you have learned over your X number of years in HR that was like totally different than what you expected it from an HR perspective? What did HR do? What do you do in HR? What do you do in your role that was like a big surprise to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I would say historically it was the amount of freedom. An HR function that is really aligned with, say, the CEO or senior management and has the full support and is functioning as a strategic consultant, it's really the value that the business places on it and the value that HR can deliver. So as a line manager for a number of years before I came into HR, I have a perspective on HR from being a line manager for a number of years. And I remember how helpful they were. And I remember them helping me out with a lot of the transactional stuff, but it wasn't until I was in HR and in specific organizations where HR truly functions as a strategic business partner where I was able to see, wow, this organization really values what HR delivers, and part of the reason they value that is because HR delivers at a high level. And when you have both of those things being true, I was really surprised at how much influence a high-functioning HR department or division can have on an organization. It really is a small rudder that steers, in a lot of cases, a giant ship and can have significant influence on the success of the business, because at the end of the day, the most important decision that's made every day is who you bring into an organization. I don't care what organization it is, for-profit, not-for-profit, what the industry is. The most decision anybody's going to make on any given day is who we hire into this company or into this organization. And if you make that decision well enough, often enough, you'll have a lot of success. And if you make that decision poorly, often enough, the business is not going to thrive. And HR has a significant input along with the management staff in making sure that that's true.
On the flip side, share a mistake you made, if you don't mind.
Sure.
That was something you maybe you really were sure of, and it surprised you that it didn't work. Again, you know, we're talking about trying to educate HR professionals, and people who get to chief human resource officers don't always do everything right. I'm sure you're perfect, like I am, of course. I don't know
you
why
only
my
want one mistake.
Well, I'm just trying to understand why my producer's laughing over there. That's why I want to know. That's what I want to know. What's going on, Deb? Sure. It's all fine. No, share that. Well, one mistake. One good mistake. How's that?
Yeah, I think that's great. Look, for me, I think underestimating what it takes to implement significant changes is a continual struggle, for HR folks, and including for me. It's like, you know, it's one thing to design a solution until, you know, even with senior management, you sit down, you look at it, whatever the solution is, it could be in any of the HR functions, new technology, right? It could be a compensation change or a benefits change. It could be, you know, how we're going to deliver employee relations service. It could be any of those things. And you sit down and, you know, you draw it up on a spreadsheet, or, you know, maybe you meet with a consultant, right, and they've got some real splashy charts and graphs, and it all looks great. And, you know, we all hold hands, you know, around the table and say, yeah, this is great. This is really going to work. But somewhere along the line, managing that change either wasn't given enough or the right amount or the right type of attention, and it becomes a challenge, right? So, you know, everyone's heard the expression, you know, that culture eats strategy for lunch, and that's true, and this is kind of related to that. But, you know, an example, kind of a real-life example I would give is, so I was at an organization one time, and we really wanted to make some wholesale changes around the way we manage compensation. And we wanted to be more transparent. So probably every HR professional has heard that if they've been in this game any length of time at all. We need more transparency. We want more transparency around compensation. We want to be able to talk about it. We want, you know, our managers to be educated. And while that is a very worthy goal, ultimately what happened is that, and what we came to understand the hard way, is that the burden of that transparency is education. So as we started this conversation, Dave, between you and I, you know, we mentioned that. So the burden of that transparency is education. So if you're going to move to appropriate transparency around any type of HR function, the burden of that is really to make sure the managers, and in a lot of cases the employees, are fully educated on whatever that is. And if you don't do enough of that, you're going to struggle. And I'll give you a perfect example of this. You know, I had a conversation with some folks from the Mayo Clinic years ago when I was at Maine Health, and we were talking about implementing a new compensation structure at the time, and I really wanted to understand from them what their approach was and how they had gotten to the approach that they were currently using, because they were generally transparent. I think their managers were well educated on how their compensation plan worked, and they did a good job of diffusing that to the employees. So I'm like, how did you get there? They said, well, one of the things we started out doing was we were trying to figure out how we could make these changes without redesigning everything. So at the time, they had a 60% target for hiring. So they said, their compensation philosophy was, we hire at the 60th percentile of the market. The problem was 2008 came along. And when that came along, when the Great Recession happened, they could no longer do that. So they had to change their philosophy. And they said, before we start to invest in making a whole bunch of changes with our compensation structure and how we deliver pay and all that, let's just educate our managers. Let's just spend the next 24 to 36 months just educating. And that's what they did. They embarked on a process where they said, for the next 36 months, we're just going to educate our managers on how our current compensation program works. And ultimately what happened, and this is where the kind of rubber meets the road, is they went from a very low percentage in their engagement surveys on satisfaction with pay, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was probably 20-30% or something like that. It was very low. And mind you, they were paying at the 60th percentile as part of their philosophy leading up to that, which is incongruent in and of itself. But when they were done all this education and they did their next engagement survey, what they found was satisfaction with pay went to 80-plus percent. And they attributed that to people are just more informed and educated now. And because of that, they understand how everything works. It's no longer a black box. We have complete transparency in how it's done. And that has made the difference. And so they ultimately, at least at that point in time, had decided not to make a bunch of technical changes to the structure, the way it works, how they were doing pay and delivering pay, because they didn't need to.
There is no question that, you know, what you talk about is so critical for people to understand that it's not always about all the information that comes in, but it's about the execution. And that is time and time again where people fall down and where the follow-up just doesn't happen. And that's no question that a critical lesson learned. Again, we're talking with Tom Ellis, Chief Human Resource Officer for the Jackson Laboratories. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill at verrill-law.com. Today we've been talking with Tom Ellis, Chief Human Resource Officer at the Jackson Laboratories. We've been talking about some great things today about talent success, making sure compensation's right, retention, all sorts of great stuff. You know what? Jackson Labs is a great place to work, isn't it, Tom?
It really is, and thank you, Dave, for giving me an opportunity for a shameless plug. Look, like most employers, we have well over 200 openings currently, and we expect that to continue into the foreseeable future. Jax is a wonderful place to work, mission-focused, and so for your audience. If they're looking to make a move or they know somebody that would have an interest in helping us find cures for cancer and help to improve human health, we're willing to talk to them, certainly.
And what is the website they can go to?
Jax.org, J-A-X.org.
And they will write on their find where they can have sign up for jobs, is that correct?
Correct. All they have to do is click on the careers page, and they'll have the opportunity to see our available list of openings.
Great. And we'll make sure that we put, obviously, the link to the website on our HR Power Hour site after this show. You know, bottom line, Tom, at the end of the day, is I think that hopefully people were inspired today. I think you did a great job of laying out some of the successful things that Jackson Laboratories has done. And certainly I understand, as well as you do, that we have size and scope to think about. Some of the small organizations may not have all the resources or the different things that that Jax does. However, the concept is still the same. And I think that's the effort or the way that I'd like to end it is, can you just maybe wrap up with about 1 minute of what the big takeaway for you is, no matter what size of the organization, how does HR succeed today?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I think really there are three things. One is learn to manage complexity well. I think the workforce is evolving. You know, the workforce demographics are changing, and you really need to think about that carefully. Number two, you know, market your organization well. Maine is fortunate in that, and really throughout all of New England, there's a wealth of great organizations doing a lot of great work. So market it well. And then number three, don't forget to invest in talent management. Make sure your managers, whatever size you are well-educated, treat your employees right, and manage performance well. And I think if you do those three things, you've got a really solid chance of success around managing the people aspect of the organization.
Tom, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Appreciate you being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back with the HR Tip of the Week. And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Can you keep a secret? Hi, this is Ben Ford from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. The Defend Trade Secrets Act makes it easier to hold people accountable for blabbing about the ingredients to your company's secret sauce or the order of steps in your secret production process. This act comes with some real teeth, including civil seizure, which allows companies to seize assets even before trial. Is there a catch? Of course there's a catch! In order to claim your rights under the DTSA, you need to provide a disclosure in your handbook and on those labor posters that essentially says that employees can disclose company secrets for the purpose of reporting illegal or unsafe conditions. Got a question about the DTSA and those pesky disclosures? Call Verrill's Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.